Welcome to Men Are Nuts, a podcast about mental health, emotional health, psychological health, physical health, awareness in men, women and society. First, it started with MAN, the acronym for Men Are Nuts. And we have a very special guest on the show for you today, all the way from the UK. She's from the UK and she's here to tell us her journey, her story regarding life, love, romance, paintings, whatever it is. Can you introduce yourself?
Hey, hey, hey. Well, I'm Kerry. I'm living in Kent, Maidstone. I'm originally from Crawley, Gatwick. I've been down here now for, I think it's 19 years, 19, 20 years. So this is home to me now. Oh. It's home, but Crawley's always got a lovely place for me. It's obviously, you know, where I was born and bred and all of that good stuff. I've got a daughter, she's 15. I've got a partner, that's why I moved all the way down here. For that love, you know, sweet young love. I am a coach, or a guide as I like to be called now, and I also actually have a brick and mortar business. I have a beauty shop where I specialise in facial treatments.
Right, okay.
So,
and
yeah.
How are things there at the moment with restrictions? I just saw today talk about control. The article said something like, I think I saw it on Instagram or something, it said something like the 17th of May they're gonna make in UK, they're gonna make some decisions, the government's gonna make decisions, which they do, and it said something like I don't know, I can't read word for word, but Boris will allow people to hug. You know, you think
it's crazy. I know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Talk about control.
Yeah.
So, how are things there for you?
I'll be really honest with you. I keep myself to myself. I've got obviously my own opinions of what's going on in the world. Obviously, it's very strict for the shop. You know, one person in, one person out. Very lucky I don't have staff, so it's just me.
Yeah.
But you know, you still got to wear your PPE, wash, sanitize, clean, sterilize everything. Yeah, I don't, apart from that, I'm just still waiting for the complete and utter lift that we can hug, we can do those things.
Because there was a, it was on Instagram as well. I don't watch the news, you see. So I get a lot of stuff from what I see on Instagram and bits and bobs and stuff. And I'm sure there was something where it said, oh yeah, and Twitter, but I shut Twitter down last year. There's something on there, and people kept. I'm sure it was last year, one of the government ministers, I don't know if it was that the other guy, what's his name? Not Boris, Nick or whatever his name.
Yeah.
And he was saying, they were talking about the thing about hugging and all that sort of stuff, and then some people start sending these body suits, you know, like fetish body suits and stuff like that, sending pictures of it as if to say we can't hug, or gas mask and stuff, we can't hug or kiss. And I thought, oh gosh, this is hilarious. How far are we going to go?
I know.
It's ridiculous. You say you live in, you say Crawley? Now you live in
Crawley, but yeah, I'm in Kent, near Maidstone.
Kent. For the listeners out there, I mean, I always do this. For the listeners out there, because, you know, this podcast goes around the world, and even in the UK, there's not many people who know where Kent is or Crawley is. So,
no.
Let them know what's it like to live there, and, you know, town, city.
Oh my gosh, do you want me to be honest? honest and transparent?
Yeah.
I can't be any other way if I'm honest. So Kent, Maidstone, well, Chatham is where I'm living. And I'll be very honest, it's a very low dense poverty area. Mm. You know, you've got lots of crime, it's lots of drugs, but then you're gonna find that every town, you know? It's very built upon where I live. I'm about 40 minutes drive from London, and you make what it is, isn't it? You make your home, you make the life that you want to live. Crawley is very open. It's not built upon. You've got space, you've got land. There's definitely a different atmosphere up there. I won't lie, I do love going back home. It's can just breathe up there more. You know, all the houses in Chatham are just literally so squashed together. It's like you're living on top of each other. But like I said, it's what you make of it. Crawley is on a train. I could be up in London within 30 minutes. Right. It's not far at all from London.
And what's it like, you know, you spoke about this, you know, crime or drugs and all those sort of things. Is it a city or
No.
London's quite, it's that type of place. Until you start going outside of London, you don't start to see many, apart from the parks, you don't see really many trees. It's almost like a concrete jungle. What's it like where you live in that sense?
It's certainly not a city at all. So we've got something called the Medway Towns, and it's literally multiple towns that literally from one road all the way to the next road. And they're kind of like little towns with shopping malls, parade of shops. That's how it is. And then Maidstone Town Centre is more, that's just one town. That's just one big massive town with lots of shops. It's certainly nicer down Maidstone. It's got a nicer feel down there.
And have you found that over the years, since you've been there, crime and things like that has got worse or things have
changed,
or what
feelings on it? I mean, oh my gosh, when I was younger we didn't have social media, and I think that has a lot to play. Everything's so more exposed now, isn't it?
You know,
back then it was just the newspapers. You go online and it's everywhere right in front of you, isn't it? And talking about social media, it's not just in person and crime that you see, you know, maybe on your doorstep or around the road or down the road. You see it online. It's not just in person now. It's such a shame, but it's the way that it's going, isn't it? We're evolving, things evolve and technology evolves.
What do you think is, or should I say, dare I say, who? We can all talk about governments, but what do you think is causing this? I know we're talking about social media, because the reason why I'm going on, just talking about this is, obviously with the podcast is about health and mental health, and it's just, I'm kind of figuring out how, with it getting worse, how do you or you see people around you dealing with, you know, the struggles of what's happening around you?
Oh my gosh, what a good topic to talk about. It's a shame because there's so much crap going on in the world, and you know, it is that mental health part, let alone all the other stuff that we have to deal with in life. And unfortunately, because of the trade that I'm in as well with my guiding, I'm trained in a lot of disciplines and in psychology and counselling and EFT, CBT. Like, I've trained in all sorts of stuff. And I've tried to work with the local GPs and the doctors and the surgeries. And the problem is that doctors are not equipped. They don't have the know-how on how to deal with mental health. The easiest thing is, here's some tablets. To me, honestly, having done this for nearly 16 years now, working with so many different people around the world and in the UK, that's not the answer. It's not the answer. But then, you know, we've got the NHS. Are people paid right? It's that self-worth and that self-respect, isn't it? I feel for doctors, I feel for nurses, because they're undervalued. They're treated like a piece of, you know. And so they're just doing it because they're doing it. And I know a lot of doctors are going private now because they can't work for the NHS. They went into it because they have a passion and a care to look after and support patients, but they can't do that. So who's to blame? I can't say who's to blame. I mean, yes, we could certainly look at the government, 100%. But then I also think, it's also partially we have to look at ourselves and how can we help ourselves? What do we need to do? Because it's too easy to blame other people for our problems.
Yeah.
And it's taking back that responsibility part to look at ourselves. And that's something massively that I do guide my clients through. Yeah. It's doing that self-development work on yourself. And I know it's scary. I was there. I know that.
And what you said then as well is... it's got kind of made me think, then, is that in the amount of years that you've been doing it, you've had to your industry and you have had to adapt and change. Is that what you found over the years? Like you said, we're talking about this, the new things are happening, like social media, and then they've got things like CBD oil and all these other things. And then and when we talk about mental health, there's things that maybe existed, but we didn't have the names for them.
Yeah, totally. And I'm very much, I don't really like labelling. Yeah. You know, I hear it too often. Oh, you've got ADHD, you've got clinical depression. It's like, well, hold on a minute here. I truly do not believe in labels, because what do? We Google it. Oh my God, I've got A, B, and C, and this is what's going to happen to me now. And so 99% of my work I do with my clients is mindset work. And it's all about your beliefs. If you believe that you're going to have A, B, C of the consequences because you're now clinically depressed, that's exactly what you're going to say. That's exactly how you're going to feel. But I'll be honest with you, back then, nothing's changed with doctors. It's too easy to here go, here's some tablets, I'll shut you up, and off you go. But then there isn't enough support out there to be able to refer those clients on or patients to get the right support. I know that yes, you have private places, but you know, I've got clients that are waiting over a year, maybe 2 years to get on the list, let alone actually be seen with somebody.
yeah. And how have you found things in the for the listeners out there, I mean, obviously this podcast is being done in, or this episode has been done in 2021. For last year, we've had this pandemic. Yes. So what's it been like for you as a person, as a family, as a business?
I'm very, very lucky because I've already put that self-development work in. I was okay with my mindset, my mentality. I can be on my own. It doesn't affect me, but I wasn't always that way. You know, if we're talking many, many years ago, it would have really got to me.
Yeah.
And I do know loads of people that won't go out their house now. They're agoraphobic. They don't want to go back to work for many reasons. One, because of that social dynamics of having to talk and speak to people. But then they've had the flip side of being at home and cherishing and loving being at home with the kids and doing all of that stuff. So it's a double-edged sword. I won't lie, when we first went into lockdown for about 2 weeks, I honestly thought we was going for an apocalypse. it was all new. We've never gone through something like this. And after the 2 weeks, things start to click in. And I'm very much in my intuition. I feel my intuition. I feel that gut feeling. And I've always followed it for years now. And just things wasn't adding up for me anyway. But I know a lot of people that have mentally suffered. But at the same time, seeing people in my shop for that business, a lot of people being open-minded now, which from my perspective, from being a coach, a guide, is incredible.
Mm.
It is incredible.
When you say open-minded, what do you mean?
That they're open-minded to look at themselves.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, blaming everybody else and not taking responsibility, and that they're willing to just, you know, have a little self-inquiry and start looking at their lives. Because we couldn't do anything. We couldn't go out anywhere. We couldn't obviously bring in money. Money was tight. And it does set different boundaries and things that we have to learn very, very quickly.
Yeah. And you said you have a child. How old's your child? Sorry, I don't know.
15. That's all right. She's 15.
How, the reason I'm asking that is because how was your child? I mean, because I've worked with children from, like, say, 3 years old upwards. And I've worked with children, various guises and different... I say guys, I don't mean like I've got a hood and I'm creeping around. I mean, I've worked with children as a mentor and all sorts of stuff, and coach. And I'm just wondering, because quite often we forget that we were kids, but we haven't been through the things that... a lot of things, obviously, I mean, for me, being an old man, I haven't... there's no such thing as social media, you know what I mean, and things like that. So that's one thing. But then you couple this with all the things that's happening now with this pandemic. What was it like for, you know, because sometimes we hide things, don't we? We hide, sometimes with children, we hide our feelings because we don't know how to express them. And sometimes it might come out in various ways. It might come out in silence, it might come out in anger or whatever. Come out in silence, but yeah, it might show a silence.
Yeah.
What was it like? What was your relationship with your child, and what was it like in terms of school?
Yeah. So I'd probably say the first 3 weeks it was new, it was exciting for her. She didn't have to go to school. All this time off, it was brilliant for her. But then I'd probably say, you know, bordering into the week four, and this probably lasted for about 3 or 4 weeks, she struggled. To not have that social dynamics of meeting up and playing and laughing and joking in person. Luckily enough, like what you just said there, I mean, I didn't have social media, but you know, she's got the iPad, she's got the phone, she can obviously go on video and chat and play and can still have a form of social dynamics, but being in person is a whole new ball game. Luckily enough, she's got a mum that's gone through a lot of stuff in her life. And as a coach and as a guide, so I can mentally support her. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I'm very much one of free speech with my daughter. I want her to be able to be herself. And whether she shouts, whether she screams, whether she cries or she sits in silence, and I give her that space to be able to be herself. But I know with her friends, she was telling me different stories, and you know, they're all struggling to, you know, obviously not meet up and get out the house. That was the biggest thing. It's not getting out of the house and, you know, having those daily exercises and moving the body. We miss all of those valuable parts, don't we?
Yeah. And you know, another thing for this is that we talked about the crime and things like that. This is just one facet of it. I always, even from last year when it first started, I said to myself, you know what, the biggest fallout, because I sit on the podcast, I started the podcast, I think it was in February. And then when this thing got kicked off, I said, one of the biggest fallouts of this is going to be mental health. And obviously mental health and young, anybody, you know, it can hit anybody. It's not, you know, it's a bit like the lottery in it with the finger, and it says it could be you, you know. So with young people, I've heard that things that have been happening, like, you know, particularly young people have started to... It's the irony of it is that people being restricted and locked in, as I say, I hate saying that, yet gangs have become... have tripled and gone, you know, there's more gangs now, even though people have been kept indoors. And you think, you know, obviously this thing gone off, maybe social media stuff and recruitment and all sorts of, they've found other ways of recruiting. So there's a lot to deal with. And I say mental health is going to be a big, yes, there's deaths, but there's deaths from pneumonia.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? There's deaths from colds and other things and cancer. You know, I had, you know, my grandfather died from cancer last year, and two friends, and they died from, you know, illnesses. So I look and I think, you know, there's going to be deaths, but the main fallout of it is going to be mental health. People struggling, like you said. I mean, you said you've got clients and you've, you know, people that you know, and you know, in Nottingham, I think there was at one point, I mean, maybe I can't remember when it was. After a few weeks, when people were able to get out and about. Was it just before they were able to get out and about, people were doing things like, you know, they was having the parties and stuff like that, and people, you know, there was a spate of literally of a weekend where there's 5 deaths or whatever from suicide and things like that. So this is going to cause, and I don't know how the government are going to cope with that. I don't know what they're going to put in or what kind of type of funding they're going to put in. But yeah, this is the reason why I spoke about your child because I think it's important that we engage with them and talk with them. How are things with your partner? How was he? And you know, in terms of your dynamics and being in the house together.
Yeah. Well, ironically, we actually split up not the year before, but the year before that. We got back together.
Yeah.
And I'd say that getting back together, it was very quickly when we went back into lockdown. And Oh my gosh, I'm gonna class myself as very lucky. We didn't argue, we didn't fight, we didn't bicker. It was an incredible situation to be put in, and they do say you'll make or break it, won't you, in an environment like that, because we never spend that amount of time. But he didn't furlough. He was very lucky, so he works night. So we still had that dynamics of, you know, seeing, not seeing each other. But I think, honestly, it actually grew us. You know, I've never been home like that in my life to have that time at home. So it's a blessing for me, but no, Craig is love him dearly, but he keeps himself to himself. And if there's a problem, he would tell me. But no, we worked as a team, and I think that's so crucial.
Yeah, fantastic. You worked as that's what I like to hear. Is this thing, not what I like to hear, I mean, but that's the thing. You know, people have spoke about, because quite often, even during this, I've got friends who are police officers and stuff like that, and they've spoke about. They told me about things like that have come about as a prelude to this, is things like domestic violence and arguments and, you know, handbags at paces, and then there's nowhere to go, because if they tell you you can't go outside, you can't. It's not exactly you can storm outside or throw the clothes outside. Oh, here you go, here's your clothes outside. Boom, get them.
Yeah.
Oh no. I can't. Restricted. So yeah. So that's you know, it's good that you're working to as a team, and like you say, things are open. Let's talk about your journey through life and growing up, and basically, it's really, the podcast is about inspiring stories that you know your journey, even your what you do, that could inspire somebody to do something in their area, the similar thing, know, similar job or whatever. Not that I'm trying to create competition.
Not at all. There's more than enough for
everybody. Do you know what I mean? If somebody's listening to it somewhere else, they could be getting ideas and thinking, oh, you know, I could do that, or, you know, she sounds like a nice person. I wonder if we could collaborate. So that's what I do the podcast for, is just to inspire others, and maybe you could save a life or two.
Oh, that's incredible. I'm with you for that, because, you know, we all have our past. We all have our, you know, crap moments in life and our hurdles, and by sharing our stories, I know that they can inspire other people. So, oh my gosh, where should I start? So, I certainly wasn't the way I am now. Right. I was shy, I was timid, I wouldn't say rude to a goose. I certainly didn't love myself, had no respect, had no confidence. I was so timid and shy as a kid. But then because I didn't have those, you know, the perfect role models, which I think a lot of us go through, you know, and obviously back then to now, with the era of bringing up kids in this day and age to how I was brought up, it is very different. Yeah. And not that there's any blame towards our parents or things that went on back then. But I was very shy, you know. I couldn't stand up for myself. I got bullied everywhere I went. Excuse me. And so from that, it's crazy actually looking back, because I still have this inner confidence to want to grow and prosper, you know, but it was only confidence in things that I was certain of within myself. Yeah. But I was a copycat, you know. I've copied people's images, I've copied people the way that they were. So I created this false exterior, this mask to be somebody that I thought I had to be. And for me as a kid, I wanted to earn money. I wanted loads of money, because, you know, we didn't have money back then. And so my dream was to get into corporate world and earn all of this money. And I thought success would come from money, and I'd have the house and the cars and all those materialistic possessions. But, you know, everyone goes through life like that. You have this societal rule book that's how life should be for you. You should follow that. And if you don't, you're outside the rules, so then you're not going to fit in. And so, you know, growing up, when I was 15, I went on the injection to stop my periods. Not so much because I was active then, I had really painful periods. And within a space of 3 months, I put nearly 4 stone. Wow. And it definitely affected my hormones, and I got really, really depressed. really severely depressed. I was agoraphobic. I didn't want to go out the house. Obviously, on top of how I felt about myself, not that I knew all of this back then,
yeah.
It was a vicious, vicious cycle. It's the only way I can try and picture it or put it into context. It was like I was just in this circle, just kept on going round with the same crap, day in, day out, of just feeling crap about myself, really fit, and I couldn't see a way out of it. I was crying all the time. I was pretty much in my bedroom 24/7, and I would just go over the same stuff all the time, but it was always negative stories about my life. And there was occasions that I did try to take my life, and that lasted probably for, I want to say, about 16. So it was a good year, maybe a year and a half. And I soon recognised in myself, which I'm very, very lucky, because I had that self-awareness to see that this is not me. This is not Kerry. I'm acting differently. I'm thinking differently. Mm. And so I stopped having the injection, and I slowly started to come back to the old Kerry, because, you know, mum and dad would say that I was an absolute cow because of how I spoke. I treated them very disrespectfully. I was a proper madam. I would have tantrums all the time. I'll be honest, I can't remember that. I generally cannot remember me acting the way that I did with them. Fast forward that. I was bullied.
Let's go back a bit, because let's talk about you being a child. There's a bit where you spoke at the beginning and you said, I don't want to quote you, that I'm sure you said something like, you say, I didn't love myself, or...
Massively.
What age was it, and what gave you that feeling not to love yourself?
Well, it's now I can look back and see that. Obviously, at the time, you don't, because you're young and you're just following other people, you know, the people that are around you, and you're just acting the way that you should. But that self-love part, I mean, I was a massive people pleaser. And that got me into trouble. The people pleasing part, you know, there is no self-love there, because you're so fearful of doing something wrong, that you're going to be an outcast, you know, going through school when you want to be, like, you know, a bit popular, and you don't want to be out of line, and you can't do yes, so that you don't get picked on or bullied. Yeah, I've got two brothers. They're younger than me.
So you're the oldest one.
Yeah.
I'll say, that's obvious. I mean, I'm just saying that you're the oldest one. I'm just thinking there, because you wouldn't have had anybody then to look up to, in a sense, because you're the oldest.
Yeah.
So you almost...
I've done it on my own.
Yeah, so you'll find your own way through your path of growing up. I'm just wondering how, you know, I know you're looking back at it now, but I'm just wondering where that stemmed from about you not loving yourself. You know, like you say, you wanted to in fact, you're doing it now, in a sense. You're pleasing people. Obviously, it's for your business and stuff like that, but we're going to come to that later on, because that's funny, because that always leads to stuff about us helping others. So bullying as well. What was you being bullied for?
Anything and everything. I was tubby back then, you know, but I was, you know, the fat kid, the odd looking kid. So, you know, now I get it. Now I understand it. You know, I didn't have this understanding back then of what I share with my clients. But, you know, I looked different. I acted different. I played different. I was quiet and I was timid. So for somebody that obviously is, you know, they've got their own problems, hence why bullies bully. They've got their own crap to deal with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it's far easier to pull it onto somebody else so that they don't have to deal with that. And because I was in such an easy target, I was so easy to bully, because I didn't stand up for myself at all. I would accept it. I was too fearful to say, you know, whether it was fight back, which I know is not the right thing to do, but... Yeah, it's But I don't, this, I'll be honest now, everything I've gone through, I wouldn't change it for the world. And that's a tough pill to swallow sometimes, I get that, but it genuinely has made me, the person that I am today, by going through all of this.
Did you, when you were being, say, talking about the bullying, because I've had somebody else who spoke, quite a few people who spoke about being bullied, and they said that they were, you know, what did you call it, tubby? Tubby.
Yeah, tubby, fat.
Yeah, quite often, you know, children can be very, we say they can be very cruel, but like you say, quite often they're going through their things or whatever it is, and that's the reason why they bully. But doesn't give an, I'll say excuse or whatever, but for you, in terms of being and fearful, I'm trying to work out were you fearful because of the constant bullying, or were you fearful before that? You know, like you said, you were timid and you were shy. Did you make many friends, or you know?
No, I had one good friend, but then unfortunately, she wasn't really a true friend. She was just using me because, again, I was such an easy target. I would do anything.
Oh, right, yeah.
So I didn't necessarily have what I would class as a really good friend. And because of that, for many years, I didn't have friends in my life. I had acquaintances, I had my clients in my businesses. I was being myself with them, but because of that experience I had, I didn't want to let myself go because of that. Yeah. You know, was people going to go behind my back? Was they going to piss me off? Was they really being my friend? It's all of those conditions that we learn from those experiences that stop us from enjoying what we could have now.
Yeah. And I was going to say then, you know, in terms of, did you have people, because you said you were timid, were you then also timid to speak out to teachers or your family?
Yeah, massively. I was the one that would sit in the back, wouldn't raise the hand, didn't want to be noticed, didn't look at the teacher, tried to hide myself. I would absolutely cack my pants if the teacher goes, Kerry, what do you think? Or can you give us this? Or come up the front. I would absolutely hate it to routine. Did not like it at all. Yeah. And I still had that when I was working in the corporate world as well. I hated team meetings and having to speak up for yourself, because again, it falls back to believing in yourself.
Yeah.
It's having that inner confidence that, you know, it's okay to speak up and it doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong. But I didn't have that back then.
Yeah. And do you think that, maybe that's where it comes from. I'm thinking it may have came from somewhere, but was that just your personality growing up? Rather than it being bullied into you, was it your personality? Were you always a timid child from, I don't say birth or whatever, but do you know what I mean? Was that you, your personality?
Yeah. Back then it was, but then, you know, there's certain things, how I was brought up, and you know, back in that era, I'm not just talking about myself, but it was very much, you can't voice your opinions, you can't be yourself, you know, shut up, be quiet, get on with it. And so loads of people have gone through that. I was just in a clubhouse today, funny enough, just talking about it, and millions. And so you get used to that, you know, when you're growing up, you're learning, and it's the conditioning. So I was that way for many years, definitely.
And you're right there as well, because quite often there's an era where we grow up, or certain, not even era, or eras where we grow up, and quite often for a male, we're quiet anyway, and quite often we're told not to say anything, and if something happens, get shouted at if you do speak up or whatever, and then what happens is, don't cry, don't this, don't blah, 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 always don't.
And
so for you, you've always been shy, but then it was compounded by the fact that you were bullied.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a stepping stone, you know. Do you know what I mean? You're shy anyway, and then somebody comes and bullies you, then you regress. Then someone else, and you're constantly regressing. And then what happens is, you then become because you bullied so much, then you become a person that wants to help others by, okay, I'll do this for you, just so you can maybe even make a friend, or you think that they're your friend, like you're just saying.
Yeah, spot on. I'd done anything just so that people wouldn't bully me, wouldn't say anything, wouldn't push me up against the wall, you know, wouldn't threaten me. I literally would have done anything. I honestly, I hate you going to school. I absolutely despised it because of it. It was that fear of who's going to get me today? What are they going to do to me today? And, you know, and I was really academic at school. I genuinely loved going to school. But by the time I got into year 10, I couldn't bear it anymore. I absolutely hated it.
Yeah. I was going to mention that as well, that by the time you're a certain age, you get to a point where you just bullied so much that you just fear going. Did that fear cause you a lot of anxiety? And the next thing I'm going to say is, is it the conundrum here? Is it hormone or is it this? Is it that? But do you think that bullying would have caused the heavy period?
Oh my gosh.
I'm just kind of putting it out there. Do you think, like, obviously people might get it anyway, whether they've been bullied or not, but do you think that could have led to the anxiety and the suppression of it and things like, I don't know.
I mean, with all the years I've done what I've done now, it's a very hard one to accept as well, but I do believe we create our illnesses and our problems because of our mindset. So yes, I would absolutely say that going through so much stress every single day and anxiety, that does put a lot of pressure. And because I wasn't allowed to express it and talk it, I'm holding it in the body.
Yeah.
So, and it creates that energy, and so you store it within the body. So yeah, I do.
You spoke about then that you got to a certain age and then you decide, are you thinking about suicide, or you attempted it, or kind of lead us up to what was going through your mind then? Obviously, you know, there's you know, you're struggling with your mind and your body, and obviously the past of bullying, the trauma of bullying. What led to your thought process about suicide? And
so it was done with a blade. It wasn't deep enough to go to hospital. But from what I can remember, it was, I can't keep on going through this. I'm like, what's the point of being here? I don't have anything. I don't have any passions. You know, when you get in that depressive state of mind in the head, there's nothing to look forward to. And so for me, it got to a point of, well, you know, I'm going through ABC in my life, and then I'm feeling the way that I am as well, and about my body, and, well, what's the point? No one's going to miss me, you know? So I might as well just go. And there was two times that I tried to do it.
How old was you, by the way, the first time? How old?
It was both 15. It was when I was, yeah, it was both 15.
Yeah. And, I don't want to go, obviously, thingy, but I mean, because people always question things about suicide. When someone's done it, they often think, why did they do it? And they want to look back, and then you start to analyse it, and people analyse at what point did the mind go from, it's a bit like taking drugs, isn't it, or something, whatever it is, or when there's a line there and they say, don't cross it. Do you know what I mean? And you kind of, you go close to it. It's a bit like going to the edge of a cliff. You're scared of height, but you want to go and look down.
Yeah.
You tend to go to the edge. And then when you take that last step, it's almost like, oh no, that's it now, I'm gone. At what point, was it a day that you decided, oh, I'm going to do this? Or was it just a moment in time? What was it for you?
It was just a moment in time. It wasn't leading up to it. I hadn't booked it in the diary. I just remember pacing my bedroom up and down, up and down, up and down, just going through the same stuff in my head, talking the same stuff, and what's the point? And that was it.
Yeah. And when you
done it.
And when you did try to attempt it, were you saved by anybody, or was it something that you acknowledged and then you kind of stopped, or what?
Yeah. So, I went to a certain depth, And I'll be honest with you, this is when I was 15. I'm nearly 36 now, so it's quite a few years ago. But no, it was, I just remember getting to a certain depth and obviously blood pissing out everywhere. And I stopped what I was doing. And I can't honestly tell you whether there was another thought, a different opinion in my head, but that was it. I didn't do it. For several months afterwards. It was probably when I was more bordering on 16. But I remember going into the bathroom and obviously hiding it, trying to bandage it, put, you know, plasters on it so that no one would see. So I kept it to myself, you know. No one knew about it.
Yeah, yeah. And then the second time, what happened then?
It was the same thing. It was exactly the same thing. The thing is, I was literally in my bedroom all the time. It was, and like, you know, I don't know whether you feel this, but when you get in that such a black rabbit hole, you have that safe haven. And my bedroom was my safe haven. Like, no one could get me in there. No one could hurt me in there. The door was always shut. And one thing I do remember, though, and it still pains me to this day, but there's no one I can blame, is that I would have liked someone to come and open the door and go, are you okay?
Yeah.
Just to check on me. Just, you know, are you okay? But that didn't happen. And sometimes I'd actually leave the bedroom door open. Yeah. And nothing, you know, no one did. But again, there's no one I can blame because it's not their responsibility to do that. But no, it was the same again. I'm sure it was when I was nearly 16. I tried to do it again in exactly the same place, on exactly the same scar. But yeah, it was just kind of like repeat, rinse and repeat, do it again. And then soon after that, that's when things start to change for me.
Yeah. And the reason why I bring this up is because I remember one of the first shows I did. You know, there's a guy who, because some people have different ways of coming back.
Yeah.
I like the thoughts of comeback and successes and story. I don't mean success. When I say this again, I keep saying this to people, I don't mean success about money. I'm talking about success of, you know, success could be the man or person who's unemployed and then they get up each morning and try and look for a job. That's a success, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the success of somebody who's had the leg amputated because of war or whatever, and they've managed to, they're able to get up and walk again or whatever, that's a success, and not go down the rabbit hole, like you say, the dark hole. And the reason why I bring that up is because, again, you'll understand this now, is what gave you the strength to come back from that? What gave you, in that moment in time when it's happening, what gave you the strength to say, you know what? Was it a light bulb moment? What is it, you know, at that moment in time, you thought to yourself, you know what, I'm not going to do this. What am I doing? So I'm here to live. You know, everyone's got their own thoughts. What was yours?
Yeah. I found out my granddad was dying. He had bowel cancer.
Right.
And I was very, very close to my grandparents. And looking back and everything I'm trained in now, all it takes is one different thought to come out that black rabbit hole. And because I was so, don't get me wrong, I was still in the black rabbit hole, but all it took was one different fall, and it was my granddad dying. That I started to see something different, and it wasn't the same story I was telling myself every single day. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And from that just one change of mindset or different story, I was able to start looking a little bit further and further and further, that actually I could have a good life. My life doesn't have to be the way that it is right now, but I have to do that myself.
Yeah.
And that's what started the ripple effect for me.
Yeah. And you say your relative was dying. Because for some people, the trauma of that might have added to the pressure on themselves. But for you, it turned things around. You basically saw life within someone dying. Did you say?
Yeah. It was a very quick sudden death as well. He didn't catch it in time, unfortunately. But yeah, and I think because of that, such a close emotional bond that I had with him, done something to me on the inside, my mindset, and shifted me so that I could come out that black rabbit hole and start living again.
And so after that time then, and then like you say, you're going into, you know, later teens and coming out of, what were you starting to make, did you, again, was there anybody around you? Was the door, did that door open, or was you having to walk out that door on your own?
On my own.
Yeah. So on your own, walking out the door on your own. Just tell us about the next part of your journey and your life and, you know, you kind of, you know, you're rising up out of that.
Okay, so left school, got into the corporate world, best thing ever, loved it. And then I shortly met...
I'm going to stop you there. Where did you get the confidence then now to... How did that confidence come then to then... Because don't forget, you've been bullied. All these things have happened to you. You're on the verge of, you know, you tried to commit suicide. You're coming out of this hole. What gave you the confidence to then want to be going to the corporate world, and what changed the mindset?
I'd always had this even before when I got, you know, the depression. Because we, you know, we lived in poverty, we didn't have much money, and I saw that my parents, or one of my parents, was self-employed and had their own business. And for me, it gave me that bear bug of, well, I can do this myself. And I was so driven by money. I can't tell you the emphasis how badly I was driven. I would have done anything to get money. I genuinely thought that money was going to give me that success, that feeling that we seek to be happy. And so when I come out that black rabbit hole, it was kind of, I guess looking back now, it was that next level for me to focus on the money. To get that big role, you know, and make my money. But the thing is, I also saw money as a control thing and also a responsibility and power. Because again, you know, I didn't think people liked me, people bullied me. And I thought, well, if I had the big role and lots of money, and people would respect me and love me for who I was. So I did. Oh my gosh, I won't lie, I've had many, many jobs, and I thought that, okay, I've got a bigger role now. Woohoo! I'm gonna be happy and people are gonna love me. And nope, that didn't happen. So then I got the next one and the next one and the next one. Guess what? No, you know, I still had the same shit that was going on in my head, because again, it's that self-love with me. I'm not gonna find it in the outside world. But because I, you know, it's agreeable. We are confident in what we want. We're confident in our own certainty when we have a direction in something. I was not confident in myself still. I still was that timid, shy person. But because what was driving me, or that driving factor, was money, I thought that if I could get that, then people will love me for who I am.
Yeah. And then you... why am I saying that? I'm presuming you had a child, because obviously you have a child. But I mean, what again... I'm looking at these things through confidence, and you building yourself, and you're timid and shy. What was life like for you in terms of meeting someone, meeting a partner, and how did you get out of that shyness to become this person to meet somebody? And
oh my gosh, I wasn't. I had little things going on at school, but nothing majorly. It's when me and Craig met each other online, and back then, you know, that was like 19, 20 years ago. It was that wasn't even existed then, was it? It was AOL. It was on the old traditional dial-up on the internet.
Was it?
and so it just landed in a chat room, and you know, it was, and I definitely say that definitely helped me. You know, to build that confidence. You know, I didn't have to show myself and talking to different people on chat and, you know, finding that identity and coming out that black rabbit hole. And I genuinely didn't think that, you know, anything would come from it, because he was down in Kent and I was up in Crawley, and, you know, it was just a bit of fun and a laugh. And before I know it, we're together and I've moved down here, and 15 months later, we have our daughter.
Wow. Fantastic. And what was that like for you then, the whole experience of meeting somebody, you know, falling in love, and bearing in mind that you haven't felt love, or do you see what I mean? You haven't felt love previously, or you haven't felt loved. And was that one of the reasons why you were going in the chat as well, to kind of maybe even find
finding that validation point? We all do it. We all want that validation to feel loved. So no, this is many, many, many years on, with me and Craig. I was still shy, I was very timid. You know, I thought I fell love head over heels, and I've let myself go, and I found the one, and, you know, I moved down. The first 2 weeks was the most hardest thing. I've moved away from home. It's a completely different life, a completely different setup. You know, I hadn't really officially had a boyfriend. You know, he was my first proper official boyfriend, and we moved in very quickly, but it took me many years to find myself, to be who I am with him. And it's only been in the last probably couple of years that that's really truly happened, because, you know, I've coached and guided a lot of couples, and only from my own experiences of being with him, that when we get with somebody, we think that that love is going to come from that person, and it's not. You know, that feeling of love, I can't hand you that feeling, can I? Like, here's that fear. It's not, I can't give it to you. So where is it coming from? Within. So you have to love yourself first to feel that, because it essentially it's coming from you. But because I was still, you know, trying to unveil the mask of who I am and know that I am love, there was obviously a lot of problems in our relationships, because I was seeking this validation all the time. I was very clingy. Very clingy. I wanted his love and touch me and, you know, do all of that stuff. And he, you know, he's not that way inclined. That's just not him. And so that did cause a lot of problems for us, and, you know, other things like other relationships do. But you do lose yourself being with somebody else. And, you know, the biggest thing that I can take away from that is you have to find your own identity and be that person with that person that you're being with. Because otherwise, like for me, when we broke up a couple of years ago, one of my biggest lessons was I was living for him and not myself. And I wasn't happy at all.
And because he was just mentioned then as well, just in those years and before that, in terms of you being in the corporate world and finding, seeking validation, you said you had multiple jobs, and I'm going to stick my neck out and say you probably never ever found that validation then.
No, never, because I was trying to find that validation within myself. So, you know, we think that other people, so essentially we're trying to find that happiness, aren't we? You know, I'll be happy when I get ABC. It happens. Might last for an hour or 2 hours. No, still not happy. So then you go and get the bigger job or the bigger house and the bigger cars and the money, whatever it is. When you realize that you're seeking a feeling, you're not going to get a happiness feeling from a house or confidence, isn't it? Like, oh, hold on a minute, let me just run down the street and I'll go and find confidence. But we think that we're going to get that from other people and situations and circumstances and things, objects. But it's not, it's in. It's always in. Everything I will ever share or guide is always inwards, because you are that.
And it's always, in a sense, these things that we get attain are always temporary. So I would say things like shopping, going to, you know, for men or women, but let's just say a woman when she's buying a handbag or shoes, and they end up collecting. You know, I remember watching these programs. I never used to watch TV, but the odd program we used to watch, my mum was watching it, and it used to be things like this program where people used to hoard things, and they used to hoard, I can't remember what it was called. And there's one where this woman would hoard in the clothes and would go shop and buy shoes and handbags, and you used to have how many handbags, and none, all of them had the labels on, and you're thinking, why did you get it? And it's always a temporary high at that moment in time, and then I need to go and get another one the following week or next week when I get paid. And sometimes some of them were going in debt and all that sort of stuff. And like you said, it's happiness is only temporary at that point. And even money, you know, because we can't take it with us. So we get it. Yes, we have to pay bills. But even then, it's temporary, because it's about finding happiness
in
yourself. So here you are, collecting all this money, sitting on all this money, and money's on the bed, and you're like, then there's no love, and there's no happiness.
No, it's not at all.
So at what point then did you realise there's no happiness in this? There's no, in terms of being in the corporate world, and how did you get out of that? To start business?
So I went into business in 2007, and the biggest turning point for me was when I had my daughter, and so I didn't bond with her. And so, although, you know, you see this stereotype of that when you have a child, you're supposed to have this unconditional love instantly and you fall in love, and I didn't have that. I did not have that, and it took me 6 months to actually confess it to myself that something isn't right here within myself. Like, I love this baby, I love her, but she doesn't feel like mine. And I was having all of these torments, and back then it was very taboo to even announce something like that. And it took me 8 months to share it with my partner. Unfortunately, it kind of went very sour. And so for 6 years, I shut up, and I struggled with it really, really badly. But there was a massive turning point for me. I woke up one day and I said, am I going to carry on the way that I am? Because I was back in my black rabbit hole in a different element.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, am I going to stay here? Am I going to stay on the floor for the rest of my life? Or am I going to pick myself back up and actually work on myself and do what I need to do? And so that was all the way back then that I trained in, for me, this is for me, not to help other people, trained in counselling and psychology and hypnotherapy. And I started all of that work on myself to realise what on earth is going on here. And as soon as I surrendered and let go that, okay, I'm grateful I have a daughter, I love her, I don't have those feelings that we should supposedly get when we have a kid, but I'm grateful for what I have. And a year later, it was so incredible. She's my world. Like, I get it now. I have that unconditional, indescribable feeling that I have towards her now. And it's amazing, but I will always say this. I never, ever, ever regret anything in my life, anything that I've gone through, because it's those experiences that, one, I can talk about and I can share compassion with other people, but also I can learn from it and grow and prosper myself. And so that was the turning point for me. That's what literally changed my life.
Yeah, and when you speak about the regret part, you don't have to make any... You don't have to make any excuses. Not excuses, what I mean by you don't have to, again, please people by explaining that. You see what I mean?
No.
You don't have to please people. You don't have to please me or anybody who listens out there, or you or anybody. Because at the end of the day, what you go through is what you... Because quite often we go, oh yeah, I don't regret it. And quite as if somebody's question is, or someone's going to question is, why did you do that? Or what...
Yeah.
The line is... We go through these things, and everybody goes through their things and has their journey. And sometimes people might go, "Well, why did you do that?" Or you think, "Well, I was going through it because I did that because I was going through this." And you know, and some people might say they live with regrets and stuff. And there's obviously some people who do things that do regret a certain situation.
Yeah.
But if it, you know, things that are caused by, you know, life, or you know, your struggles or whatever it may be, or illnesses or sickness, there's not really a thing to regret about it. Do you see what I mean?
No.
And you're here to tell the story. You know, I'm sure after that year of kind of the training and all that sort of stuff, and finding out about yourself, that there must have been tears of joy and you realizing, oh, you know, this is my daughter, and you know, I've got to love this. You know, I'm going to love this person. As, you know, she's there, and you know, there must have been. You know, I'm thinking of things like, you know, wonderful moments. You're going and you're hugging each other and all that sort of stuff. So stuff. So your relationship changed. Your relationship with your children changed. Your relationship with yourself changed. What made you then come out of the corporate business to then start your setup your own then? Was it that?
No. For me, I found that I was not manageable. I'm very much, tell me what you want and I'll do it. Yeah. Do not micromanage me. Do not stand over me. If you want it done, I'll get it done. And that didn't work for me at all. And so for me, it was like, well, what's going to work? Well, working for myself then is. And so I made that transition. And don't get me wrong, I've done lots of things in my businesses. I've done the whole, you know, marketing with different products. I've gone down that route. When I was very lucky that before I left school, I trained in hair and beauty. So I was already a qualified beautician and hair and stuff. So I'd done that on the side, whether it's part-time, full-time. But it was probably a good year and a half after I started learning and doing the things that I needed to do and having my transformation that I started to help others and look at themselves. So that's when I started my coaching back then. Well, it was counselling and then it went into coaching. And it's just been an incredible journey ever since. And I'm always learning. We're always learning. Yeah. Every single day I'm learning.
So did you set up a... how did you set it up? Was it set up as a... As a practice.
Yeah.
What was it like for you then to again? I'm talking about success here, and I like to. You know, I'm big on comebacks. I like the underdog. I like fighting. So I'm thinking about, because I like the thing that the fact that you. I always think about the moment. What was the moment like when you set up the practice and you opened the door and the first client came in, or what, you know, do you know what I mean? What was that feeling like for you?
Oh my gosh, it was incredible. The thing is, it's so funny when I look back and how timid and shy I was, but I always had a streak of taking a risk. And it was a big risk. It's not like I had years of practice of doing this, but... yeah, I actually rented a room in a very large salon in the back to do my counselling back then and having my first client. I'll be honest with you, it is that pinch. Is this real? Is this happening? You know, and, you know, looking back to then to where I am now, like when I got my shop for the other business, I'll be honest with you then, it's still, have I really got a shop? And I guess it is, how do you define success? Because back then for me, success back then was money. But then that's because I thought people would love me. Yeah. And obviously I don't look like that anymore. But no, when someone walks through the door, and for me, it's that transformation side. It's seeing somebody go through something that, you know, whether it was I went through or something different for them and they have that transformation, that is what it's all about.
That's how you kind of find your success, because you're able to see somebody come in like this and they could walk out the door like that. It goes back to that thing about the door opening, doesn't it? Because I mean, it comes back to having that door open and, you know, you're waiting for somebody to come in and people were coming in. I'm just thinking out, you know.
I love that metaphor. No one has ever said that. I love that. And it's so true, because people, we you know, that door does need to be open, but the hardest thing is though is for people to open that door.
And sometimes, so for you then, in your business is flourishing, your business is flourishing, your people are coming in, how were you able to market yourself and advertise yourself as this person, as a coach, a coach?
Well, back then we didn't ever really have social media. So it was an old classic advert in a newspaper. And then I was blessed because I worked in a shop. So I had the clientele from the shop and then the adverts I put in the newspaper. But then obviously social media grew. I've had great success on Facebook doing adverts. And then when people started to get to know me and how I worked and how I helped, it was just word of mouth. I was dealing, or not dealing, that's the wrong word, but I was helping and guiding individuals on the mental side, because obviously that was something very close and passionate because of what I've gone through, and I've seen other close family members go through that. And then I transitioned and I went into the world of coaching, and ironically to say, I was coaching coaches around the world internationally. Wow. On their business and their mindset.
Right.
That was an incredible experience as well. And the beauty of that, I don't have to be there. I can do it on here, on the computer. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, can you tell the listeners, what is it that you do? You know, you talk about coaching, what is it, you know, obviously you don't want to talk about the individual client, but what sort of things and what sort of people come to you? Is it a range of people? Do you tend to get more men than women, or, you know, what's your business?
Okay.
And the name of it, and the name.
So you can find me, I'm mainly on Instagram at the minute, so you can find me as Kerry J. Mears. I'm actually transitioning, so I was doing more business side and the mindset side, but I'm more transitioning into the personal side of the transformation of being who you want to be. That freedom to be who you want to be and not fearing other people's judgments of you. And I can, this is my thing. This is me being a kid. This is everything I've explained to you of what I've gone through and putting, you know, having that mask on, because society and our, you know, our parents, school, social media, that's how I should be. But I've unveiled that mask now, and I can tell you now, it's so freeing. Freeing to be who you want to be, stand up, say what you want to say, go and get the things you want to get in your life. That's what I do for clients, for individuals, for coaches or people in service, to know that they have that inner confidence to be able to speak up and not be fearful anymore. And not be that shy, timid person that I know I used to be. And going out, and it's like the biggest thing is, who are you living your life for? Are you living your life for others and society? Or do you want to live your life for you? Because we only get one chance in this lifetime. And I want to make it frigging count. So I guide clients in, it's all inwards. So I'll never ever teach or coach clients on outside. So I never tell you to go and get confidence by going to do A, B, and C. Because as we know, outside of us is not going to give us that feeling. It's having that self-realization, that self-discovery that you are confidence, you are love, you are capable of doing all of those things within. But it's having that realization. But the biggest thing is all your past conditioning. That's what's going to hinder from you being able to realize that within yourself. Granted, what I teach and share, you have to be open-minded for it. And you have to be open-minded, because it's going to go against the grain. It's going to go against the grain. And so, yes, it can be very spiritual, but I do try and put it in an easy format so that people can understand. And I love this question, and it gets people thinking. And if I could leave it with your listeners, that if you think you are the person in the head that puts you down, the one that tells you you're not good enough, you don't have the confidence, or don't be so stupid, you can't do that in your life, the one that constantly grinds us down, if you think you are that person in the head, who is listening? It really does get you thinking.
It does. So you get different. Do you find that you're previously, or even now, do you find that you're getting more men or women, or is it balanced?
Mixture. It's mixture. I'll probably say men are a little bit further with women, but it works for both. But I'll be really honest with you. You've got to want it. You have got to want to help yourself. I can teach you, share until I'm black and blue. But unless you're willing to open that door, there's nothing I will say to you that's going to help you, change you, look at you. You've got to take that responsibility back for yourself. And as soon as you start doing that, I promise you now, your life will start to change massively.
Yeah. And for, do you find then as well, do you find that women and men come in with, you know, because we are different, but do we come in with different things?
Yeah, of course they do.
We come in different things, and it tends to be
man
things, and women can. Do you know what I mean? Is that what you see a lot of?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest play here is your past. You know, our past, whatever we've gone through, we suffer in the now present right now because of things that's happened in the past. Because of that traumatic experience or the things that we've gone through, we hold on to it so dearly. So we create a story, and that story then creates our future of, oh no, I can't go and do that because that might happen again. It's that fear factor. And so, you know, everyone has all sorts of things from their past. You know, I've spoken to lots very similar to my background, especially the bullying, not being able to speak up back then. I'll be honest, I don't typically get youngsters for this. I'd probably say my age range that I get at the minute is anywhere from 25 to 55. But yeah, everyone is so different. And it's not in a nicer way, it's a joy for me to listen. I genuinely love listening to people. But I guess if I have that magic power, if you want to call it, I'm able to see behind your stories of where your limiting beliefs are, to then be able to surrender and let go to your past, to then realize that all that stuff is hindering you to being the person that who you really are.
Yeah. Fantastic. And it's been, I would say to you, you know, the times where you were struggling and stuff like that, you know, just before we kind of wrap things up, because I mean, I think we could talk for
I know.
Do you find that, when you were younger, what things did you do to cope? You know, like when you, yes, you did things like please people, but what, you know, outside of that, when you'd get home, but what sort of things were you doing to kind of, what were your coping mechanisms when you were younger? And then even when you were older and you were might have been going through things, did your coping mechanisms change as you got older?
Yeah. So I'm very, very creative. So I'd lock myself in the room and I would draw. I was a really good artist back then. I would draw, I would paint, I'd create 3D models. I would draw pictures on my walls and paint them. That was my sanity back then. And then as I grew older, cleaning. I would clean to get out of feeling the way that I felt. I absorbed myself in it. And then the biggest one was my career. I was a workaholic. I would do all hours under the sun to not to have to go back home and deal with that stuff or be quiet and sit there not doing anything, because obviously the one in the head that I was just talking about always goddamn talks every second and creating more crap. So I would go and do anything I could in my power to not have to deal with my problems.
Yeah. And what do you see as the... What sort of things do you do now? I mean, you've got your family around you and stuff like that. You've got your business. What sort of things do you do now to kind of wind the hours down and you know, are you a person that goes to, I mean, obviously not now, but I mean, restaurants? Are you a person that goes for walks? What sort of things do you do now? Are you a person that draws?
Yeah.
Because when you said something about drawing, and I went, you'd never ever lose it.
No, definitely not. No, my partner and daughter will always come to me for drawing. Yeah, they do. They always come to me for drawing. So I still have the artistic dream. I love creating. Definitely will always stay with me. But right now, I mean, okay, take away the pandemic and doing that stuff. I love going to a restaurant. I love that social dynamics and, you know, eating good food as well. I'm a lover of food, and just getting out the house and just being social. But when I go home, my downtime is reading books. I love self-help books. Anything to shift my mindset, for me to grow, to prosper. Can I look at things in a different way? I'm always learning, and I love learning. If I can better myself, I know that I have more tools and strategies or ideas that I can help my clients with as well. So every day I'm learning and having ha-ha moments.
Yeah, because again, I was going to pick up on that as well, that the learning now has probably stemmed from the fact that some of it you would have missed out on because of the fear of going to school and being bullied. So a lot of the, like you say, you were academic, but you know, probably some of that learning would have been gone out the window because you were bullied and not being able to face school, and even being in school, the struggle of being in there amongst all these people. Gosh, yeah.
The thing is, I have dyslexia as well, and so that was a struggle. But, and you know, a family member had it and was very apparent with it, was very open-minded and shared it with us. And I always said to myself that I would never, ever let that stop me from being who I want to be. I was very drummed into that at a very young age. Because obviously I saw that certain person and it stopped that person from doing the incredible things in their life. And, you know, I've got better over the years, but can I still read and write everything? No, I can't. But that's not going to stop me from doing the things that I want to go and do in my life.
Actually, it's classed as a superpower now. So, I've done a lot of reading up on it, and I've taught children with dyslexia and young people. So, yeah,
it's actually classed as, I love that.
Those things, ADHD, and that's classed as a superpower because there's jobs that people, there's jobs that people call normal. What is normal? But people can't do that. People with dyslexia can, funny enough,
ADHD.
So, it's classed as a thing. I think there's a market now where it's coming forward that's for people with learning difficulties that can access. There's jobs that are out there that I'm not saying they can't do any jobs. I'm saying there's actual high profile jobs that they can do. I once did a podcast with somebody who worked at Google, and he said that people with who didn't have ADHD couldn't do what he did.
Yeah.
Because he's actually set up for that role. So what would you like to, you know, before we go, or before we end the podcast, because obviously, you know, I'm aware of your time and stuff like that. What would you like to, for people who may be struggling with the things that you've been through or just life or whatever, give us a couple of lines. What would you say to them? Apart from, come speak to me and come to my...
No.
I want you to do that. I want you to do that because, I mean, I think it's good for you to have access for people to come and chat and thing. And I'd like to talk to you again another time about dyslexia. That's another thing, another podcast I'd like to do. Fire away.
Okay. Well, one thing for certain, I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I just want to say thank you for actually having me on here. What can I shed light on? I pretty much said it earlier that no matter how bad it is right now, if you can just look within and just start to ask yourself some little questions of, who am I? Who am I? Who is Kerry? Why am I here? What do I do? What's my purpose? It's starting to shift that mindset a little bit. Start to create a different story for yourself. But you've got to allow to open the door. That's the biggest thing. But when you open the door, yes, it can be scary. I'm not going to sit here and lie. But I can say hand on heart now with myself and my clients, it's the best thing you will ever, ever do in your entire life. And you'll look back and think, oh my God, I should have done it sooner. But it is liberating. It's liberation when you can start looking at yourself.
Yeah. And again, for listeners out there, tell them about your business. Tell them about your name of your business, where you can be found. What social media presence or wherever you can be found? It's website.
So my website is Kerry, KERRY, Mears, MEARS, sugar.com. But I'm very active on Instagram, so you can find me at Kerry J for Jane Mears. You can message me, you can DM me on there. There is a contact form on my website as well. But I'm also heavily in Clubhouse. It's the same username, Kerry J Mears on Clubhouse. I do host a room, so I co-host one room on Clubhouse, but I'm also starting my own club room where I actually share and I guide and I teach and I coach. So it's free training. There's nothing in return. You come up with a specific problem or an issue and I will guide you there and then.
Thank you. And thank you for coming to the podcast. And what's your plans for the rest of the day?
Well, I've actually got my in-person program in my shop for my coaching, my guiding. So So that starts in an hour or so. So I'm going to be prepping up for that.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go home and chill because, you know, one of the biggest things is loving yourself and having that time, which I never done before. It's not feeling guilty and giving yourself permission to do those things and sit on your ass, have a cup of coffee, watch a film, do what you want to do. And I might even have a takeaway tonight. You never know.
Anything fancy? Anything you fancy? Pizza? What?
I'm finding it. I love an Indian. I do like Indian food. It's yummy. It's a spicy. It's the flavour in it. So yeah, I might have that.
And that was Men Are Nuts. Speak to you soon.